Welcome, everybody, to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke with Chris Flower. Today's show, we're going to have a bunch of topics. We're going to highlight the career of French champion Raymond Poulidor, the greatest second-time finisher ever. We highlight the career of him. We're going to do some River Ride World Championships. What's the route? Who's coming in? Who's fit? The picks. We're going to talk about my Tyler's Fence. Maybe some updates on the World Tour cycling. USA Cycling Road calendar release. Some things that make you go, Some winners and losers. And what did Kurt say? All right. Chris is finally in studio. Welcome. Yeah. And how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Haven't been in a while. I didn't know how to get here again. I lost my directions.
you knew how to get here.
Just, I couldn't make it. So.
Wow, I appreciate you coming. Yeah. We have Kurt on the line. Kurt?
I did get a message from him. He said he doesn't have internet or phone, but somehow he texted
me. He texted you that. So, yeah. Well, Kurt is up in Nevada City, right?
Correct.
And he is snowed in, he said?
That's a stretch. I think he saw snow.
He was sending us pictures of snow, though.
But I don't think that was his house. I think he drove up further.
You don't think that was his house?
He was planning this escape early.
Right. It was weird. Everything was like from the 1970s. Right. So it might have been. Look, who out there is riding? Are you getting some riding in?
No. I think I've ridden once or twice in the past 2 weeks. And that was when the weather was good. So
what are we going to do? Because coming up here, I mean, look, we're almost to December. And then San Bruno comes up first of January.
How do they run that race? Is it like categories by weight, or is it racing categories? I feel like that would be a good thing to reevaluate for a January 1st race.
Right. So, you know, like golf, we have you're handicapped, right?
Right.
You do an event, you're handicapped on your score. We kind of have that with cycling, with divisions.
Yeah.
But maybe they need to add a new one, just weight class.
Right.
Like, hey, sorry, you didn't cut weight.
Yeah. I mean, it's January 1st.
Right.
I'm not going to be coming into that very fit.
You are not. I am not. Are you back into, right? I just saw our friend Nate Dunn and Sam Bassetti wrote an article all about getting back into, on the trainer and tips for being on the trainer and those kind of things. You doing that this year, like always?
I'm going to have to. I haven't started yet. The trainer is in the garage. I've pulled it out of its storage place, but I don't have a bike on it at this time. It started raining here yesterday, and it looks like it's going to extend for quite a while. So, yeah, I think if I'm going to be doing any riding, it'll have to be on the trainer.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing. I was just telling you, I got home yesterday. I'm taking some extra time, just, going home and doing stuff with the family, getting ready. And hey, let's go ride in the garage. And it did not happen. And matter of fact, it not only didn't happen, it just, it was cold out there. There's a lot of motivation things that have to happen.
At least you thought about it. I got home and I did not think about I should go ride the trainer. So you're a step ahead there. That's good.
I am. And I thank you. Now, look, we're wanting to ride. That's all this issues. Raymond Poulidor can't ride anymore. He died. And maybe we should be grateful as a time of Thanksgiving that we are able to still ride.
Chris. That's true. And in his prime, he probably wouldn't have been using a trainer anyway. He would be out braving the elements and riding in that manner. So we've really gone soft here.
Okay, so let's talk about Raymond Poulidor real quick. Most of you may know him. He's French champion. Some of you may know him from his grandson, Matthew Vanderpoel. And who is Matthew Vanderpoel?
He's a pretty good cyclist.
Right.
He was a top 30 finisher in this last world championship.
Yes, he was. He's an amazing cross rider. Does he do mountain bike as well?
Yes. That's his whole thing. He wants to win the Olympics.
That's right. That's right. Well, his grandfather was Raymond Poulidor, I think French, and he marries a Belgian. Is he Belgian?
He is Dutch.
He's Dutch. Sorry. Van Aert is Belgium.
Correct.
That's what I'm getting those two can mix up. And his dad was André Vanderpoel, another good Dutch cyclist himself. And obviously Matthew is kind of the renaissance and the guy to be. Anyway, Raymond, his grandfather, pretty proud of his grandson. He's been on the podium, hanging out with him when he's won. He died at age 83. Let's just talk a little bit about his stuff. He raced from the 1960 to 1977 against some of the big wigs, Jacques Anquetil and Eddie Merckx. Anquetil was a four-time winner, I think, of the Tour. Eddie Merckx was a five. Maybe Anquetil was a five as well. He rode 15 Tour de France's, four Vueltas, no Giros, seven Tour de France stage wins, two Critérium du Dauphiné wins for GC, two Paris-Nice GC wins, and he won the 64 Vuelta and also four stages. Back then, the Vuelta was in between the Giro and the Tour, a little bit different. And, So he was perennially known as the second place guy, and had a lot of second places due to being around Merckx and that whole generation.
So. Yeah, that would make it difficult to take a win.
Right, so. But that's quite the family. I just thought we'd talk about him since a little history in here.
Yeah,
quite the history, and seemed like a good guy. I don't know what his, I think he just died of old age, 83 years old. R.I.P. Raymond Poulidor.
Yeah, no, that's, I did not know the connection there to Vanderpool. So that's a good lesson learned on my part.
Good lesson learned. Yeah, so obviously Vanderpool, you look at him, you go, oh, he's got the genes for it.
Definitely.
Yeah. But it's also, you don't see a lot of, world class, maybe you do see, maybe we can talk about a few of them. Stephen Roach, is a great rider himself, and he's spawned, his own son, Nicholas Roach, and then his nephew, Dan Martin. Mm. So you've got that. Eddie Merckx and his son, Axel. Axel was an okay rider, came up through that that whole weird era.
He's got a good team now.
Got a great team, and he's doing amazing things with that. There's other riders as well. I wanted to say it's a Van Poppel. There's Boy Van Poppel. There's another Van Poppel. There's
Danny, I think.
Danny. But their brother, their dad, was a good rider as well.
Pops.
Yeah. Does that happen in the U.S.? Stetna.
Yeah.
His uncle and his father, LeMond.
Finney.
Davis. He retired. What do you think about that? You haven't been in here for a while. Any topics that we've gone over or news things lately that you just want to throw out? Start with Finney. What was your take on him?
It makes sense. I mean, it obviously he didn't have the passion to race anymore and was interested in doing other things. So it makes sense from a... It probably takes the pressure off him and expectation off him. And it also frees up a spot on the team for somebody to fill in there. So maybe it opened a spot for Paulus.
Right.
It seems like it's a good decision. I don't know what he plans to do in cycling, if he's going to do some of these alternative events like gravel racing, or I think he tried to do Leadville but didn't start because of an injury or something. So I don't know if he's going to continue doing, amateur competitive racing or what he's going to do.
But. In his retirement, he didn't really say anything about that. Whereas Stetna came out and he's like, hey, this is exactly what I'm doing. And he seems to have the ball rolling for that. I tend to think that Finney will be at art shows.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
And maybe some underground music scenes.
Seems like a good fit for him.
Right. Or maybe we'll see him up northern California, out in the woods somewhere.
Could be, yeah.
I think there's some place. Anything else that's happened that you've been aware of lately? Last several months, World Championships happened.
We talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, we. I guess we did.
I think we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about? I know you're really excited about this because this was your topic. Was the River Ride World Championships are coming up? Why don't you take us off on that? Why don't you give the layperson out there what this is, what it means to be the world champion? And give them an introduction as to what this is.
Well, I think a talking point before the World Championship would be the ride that's always on the calendar for tomorrow. That's kind of the, I wouldn't really call it a prologue, but it's kind of the prelude to the River Ride World Championship, and that's the Sacramento Thanksgiving Day ride.
Right.
Starts in Sacramento, goes out to Rancho Marietta and back.
Yeah.
Mellow ride for the most part, gets a big draw, and it's kind of like the, just casual ride of the year, brings out a lot of people. But I think that's, it seems to be intermittently attended by quite a few folks, but not as many as when I first went on it. But that kind of leads you into the Saturday after Thanksgiving, which is the River Ride World Championship, and that's that's the culminating event for, I think, the Sacramento racing season.
Okay. Do you want me to make any comments about the Thanksgiving Day ride?
Well, I know you're a big fan, and I don't think you've missed it in quite a few years. So
you mean made it?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that ride.
Are you?
It's a big cluster.
It's kind of messy, unfortunately. And with the amount of construction that's going on out in the area where the route rides, it seems like it's just going to get more and more challenging to have 300 people on single lane traffic going at a mellow pace.
And I've mentioned before my disdain for it, which I'll continue to do. I understand people's enjoyment getting in a big group out there to ride together. I'm trying to rationalize why I dislike it so much. And I think it's more along this time of year, we just talk about riding. And I want to get fit.
Right.
And I feel it's a completely wasted day. It's almost worse doing it than not doing it.
Yeah.
And so I'd rather go out and smash it somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, my thing.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, you have a limited riding window, and you don't want to waste it on a casual ride.
Right, and my disdain for people.
That too. Yeah, you don't okay. want to be around 300 people.
So that's the prologue. So whoever wins the prologue, they're starting in the.
I don't think anybody wins the prologue. Gotcha. Everybody wins the prologue.
See, that's another reason why I don't like it. I'm not big on participation stuff. Okay, so River Ride, say that a bunch of times, is a big. Famous ride in Sacramento.
Right.
They have multiple days, you know, the Tuesday ride, the Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think, ride.
Saturday as well.
Ride.
Yeah.
And the Saturday one is a traditional route out toward the Garden Highway.
Right.
And it's really fast. They have some sprints along the way. Well, they do a year-end one, an unofficial world champion. They've had it in the rain before.
It happens rain or shine. Yeah. Definitely.
I was just thinking a few years ago when Kurt thought he won because he said he was the only one that at the finish didn't go over the yellow line. If you don't go and like challenge oncoming traffic, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, especially this time of year when you do get a little more weather, wind plays a big factor. So you're going to be kind of, I'm sure the unofficial rules say, you know, obey traffic, don't cross the center line. But the reality is it's kind of a no holds barred type of race ride where you're gutter to gutter, just going all out. I mean, I've done it a few times. It's a fun event. It's, like you said, normally there's a couple sprints on the ride, but on this one, there's just one sprint and that's the final sprint on San Juan. Usually there's an extra loop thrown in on the course. I think the course has been posted up on the River Rides social media site, their Facebook page.
Right. You want to go over the route?
Not really, because it's like 40 turns.
Left, right, right. Yeah, so you're exactly right. And I think in the modern era, that the Brian Larson won it several years in a row.
Yes.
Yeah. Jeff Watson a few years ago.
Yes.
I think Josh Wood.
Yes.
Won it. And who was last year? Do you know?
I do not remember.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's we'll just say Andre. Anybody out there?
Yeah, that's fair. No, it's pretty well attended too. I've been out there and it's 50, 60, 70 people. It throws in an extra loop to add a few extra miles into the event, and it's a pretty cool event. It looks like the weather for tomorrow is going to be pretty wet, pretty windy. We've had a pretty significant storm roll through, so it looks like there's going to be some continued wind out of the south tomorrow. So that should make the lead into the sprint kind of interesting, because you're going to be going straight into a headwind for the kind of.
Well, tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
You're right. I'm thinking of Saturday.
Okay. Saturday. So maybe you're listening to this and tomorrow is the River Ride. So
that could be. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So they're out in the Garden Highway. Do you know where they meet to begin with?
Yeah. It starts at, I guess it's now called the Trek Bike Store of Sacramento. Used to be City Bike.
Okay.
Yeah, and that kicks off at 10 o'clock, neutral ride out onto the Garden Highway until you get under Interstate 80, and it's go time.
And then the directions here say, right on Alberta, right on Metro Parkway, right on Powerline. You can find this on their Facebook page.
Yeah.
Like anyway. I said,
there's a lot of turns. If you've done the route, you know, you probably know more or less what to expect for the event.
I have no idea who's quote-unquote signed up.
So you do not check pre-reg?
So who are the favorites?
Like I said, I haven't been on my bike in more than twice in the past 2 weeks. And before that, it was a ride here or there. So I'm unfortunately not tuned into who's fit. And I haven't done a river ride this year that I can recall. So I'm not sure who's riding well amongst that group at the moment. But it's usually, you know, you've got the local River Ride kind of powerhouse team of Touchstone, and they obviously are always going to be riding strong, and that's a
Baker. That's a,
yeah, you've definitely got, well, which one?
Well, I imagine Chris will be out there.
Right.
I mean, Jonathan Baker's strong, but he might be doing something else.
He's probably doing cyclocross practice somewhere. Right. So, but yeah, it's a fun event, and I have no idea who's riding well. And it could just come down to just a total crazy bunch sprint.
It usually does come down to a sprint, so it kind of depends on who's prepped and ready at this time of year for that kind of thing.
Right.
I saw Espy was posting the route on there as well. Who knows?
Yeah.
You can't really predict it, but maybe we'll do this. When we post this out, we go to our Facebook page. Maybe you can write your predictions.
Oh, okay.
And you can, or on the YouTube. So any of those come up. Anything else about the River Ride World Championship? To me, that's kind of the pinnacle of the year of my worst point of fitness.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, I need to turn it around.
Right.
I'm going to the family's house, and it's about time for me to start getting serious.
Have you ever done it?
I haven't done. I've done the River Ride, but not the World Championship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always on the Saturday where we go to San Jose for my family, and
gotcha.
It's my wedding anniversary this year. So.
Oh, okay. More reason not to go.
Right. Hey, do you mind? No, she's not. She's gonna mind. Speaking of women, I'm married to a woman. Women's World Tour update. We'll do a few little things here. Sophie DeVoist admits to failing a doping control. She's a Belgian. She won the Brabants d'Epil. She was tested positive for exogenous steroid in out of competition test. Her Park Hotel Valkenburg team announced it had suspended her pending analysis of the B sample.
So I saw that pop up. Was that yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday or so.
So she admitted that she failed the doping protocol or doping test, but did she admit to, I took something?
No. She said, this is a message I never wanted to write. To my astonishment, I received the message yesterday that I tested positive for exogenous steroids during the out of competition test on September 18th is what she wrote on her Facebook page. So she's definitely saying that was not,
That's like an extreme thing to have pop into your sample. It's like, oh, it must have been in the orange juice I drank that day.
Right.
I mean, that seems like it's a given fail.
So, well, the reason I even bring this up is because it's you don't see the females on the doping spectacle very much. And then when they do, I mean, when it's testosterone, that's not something that's readily available in their system.
Right.
To the extent of men, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then you have exogenous, which is... basically synthetic, right? Type of steroid, is that what
I understand,
okay.
Yeah.
So then you have that. So it's not a naturally occurring thing that's going on here. Something is happening.
Yeah.
And bad meat, I don't know.
Yeah.
She's definitely claiming it. And the reason I kind of bring this up is because then the team immediately suspends her. And while I get that, so to me, there's two sides of this. I feel bad, like, for most people, something B sample just means, hey, there's a problem, and then you wait for the A sample to come back because you get to have it tested, or if you ask for it at least.
Right.
She's immediately sacked.
She's suspended, but she's not fired. So maybe that just means, hey, you can't race until we figure this out.
Possibly. I guess that's exactly what it is. Suspended with immediate effect. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're not letting her race around like Froome.
Right. Does she get paid still?
Good point. I guess maybe she is getting paid still.
Yeah.
But it still sucks. And I get both sides because, hey, if you're going to be positive, you don't want this person out there. This is why these things maybe need to be done on a little quicker basis, I guess.
Right.
But you don't want that person out there racing if they're under, possibly going to be suspended and then all those results go away. But in the same respect, you want to have someone have their due process and not be... what if it comes back, the A sample's okay?
Right.
It won't.
Or the B sample.
The B sample. Yeah. It comes back and it's okay. I mean, it won't, but.
And it seems like they should be able to turn that analysis around pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's something that should, I would assume, get cleared up
if it's not an issue in a week.
We're just
hearing about this from the 18th of September.
Right.
For Worlds. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sucks for her. She looked like she was a 32-year-old Belgian, was recently awarded the Flandering of the Year prize for her 2019 road season that included a victory in Brabants d'Epil. So, whoops. What if she'll have to give that back? Just another thing on the UCI, on the women's side, UCI aims for quota equality in men's and women's road events for the 2024 Paris Olympics. I just wanted to bring this out real quick because Catherine Bertin had written an article for Bicycling Magazine titled, "Hey UCI, your sexism is showing," and she was pretty harsh on them, saying that men have 130 spots where women have 67. I don't understand why there would be a big discrepancy for the two events. I would like, maybe the UCI has a reason, but it sounds like since they're going to try to have the equal, and I imagine it started with, when they were first doing it, of even being able to field. So if you don't have 130 riders for women, because the sport just isn't as evolved throughout the world, you're having some Namibian rider.
Right.
Someone who shouldn't actually qualify. I don't know. Her article had some issues about qualification, too.
But. So who dictates the quotas? Is it UCI or is it IOC?
I think it's a UC. Well, good question. What's interesting is part of her article was complaining, too, and I didn't understand why it was this in a gender issue, because everything for her was a gender issue. She was complaining about the selection process, and when I talked to Mike Sayers in here, you guys can go back and listen to that. He was specific about it's road events that determine time trial qualifications, mm-hmm. which is kind of weird in itself.
Right.
But she was complaining about that. So, and that's UCI. I mean, the UCI World Championships placings determine how many spots they get for the worlds.
Right. Yeah. And I kind of understand some of the little discretion that they have with selecting time trial counts based on road events. Because if you've got time trials are typically going to occur in stage races, and a lot of guys phone that in. So it's really hard to make an accurate assessment of time trial capability when maybe 30% of the field is trying and the rest of the field is just trying to make the time cut so they can help the team in the next stage.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's weird. I mean, when I was with Mike, I'm like, oh, I'll be interested to see some of these Americans because, the talent pool is pretty good and the competition is going to be good to see how they're really going to be laying it down this year. And he's kind of like, nah, it's not really how it works.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, never mind.
Right.
One thing that was interesting, though, was Catherine Bertin was also in her article. She was upset that the men and the women aren't racing the same distances, though. And she's like, hey, there's research out to show women actually excel at long distances. My response to her isn't so much whether they excel or not. Is I like, everyone's loving the shorter events. Mm-hmm. I think some of the women is more exciting, and then you want them to go out and do a six hour ride too, maybe. But I'm just kind of enjoying the more punchy. People are fit at the end. It's more of a haymakers being thrown. Whereas sometimes the men, especially in the Olympic level. Or the World Championships, where you're doing, 150 miles.
Right.
Yeah.
We've had a couple good World Championships recently, like the one Valverde won. That was a really good finish. I think some of it comes into course dynamics. Right. Obviously the lead-in to some of those events where it's like, okay, we'll send the breakout for 150 of the 180 miles, we'll really race the last 30.
Right.
Yeah, some of that's a little tedious.
Right. And I honestly, I don't know if the women would want to do that kind of distance.
Do you know what the distance differences are between the two? Is it significant?
I think right now it is significant because I think the women actually are under 100 miles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And corrections, if not, but it seemed like to me when in her article that it was she listed there. Because I think the men are typically under 150 some miles.
I wonder if some of that comes down to, okay, say they've got 67 women, but they expand that to 130 for the men. But at the same time, you expand the race distance to equal the men's race distance. As you noted earlier, the depth of the women's field isn't as significant as the men's, and you may get some people in the race that, might get dropped 40 miles into a 150-mile race, and then... How do you handle that as a managing association? Do you pull people off the course or do you kind of let them finish?
Right. And who knows?
Right.
She's saying here the men will race 234 kilometers while the women race 137.
Okay.
The men will climb Mount Fuji and Makuni Pass. Makuni's, that's sounds like some good sushi.
Yeah.
I'd like to have some of that. All right. Anything on that you have?
No, I did see, though, just kind of in the topic of Olympics, not necessarily as it pertains to quotas, but I saw that they've released the, I guess, quotas, the team counts for the Olympics. And there's quite a few teams that are going to be really well represented, Belgium, France, Colombia.
Yeah, and it seems like that when Mike was in here that Americans are not.
No, I think they had two or three. Yeah. I forget the number.
I want to say two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to be a more climbing-oriented course as well. I know they've done some test events over there on some of the course, right. So it looks challenging.
What did I just say? Mount Fuji.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that supposed to be a big mountain?
It's pretty big. It's a big volcano.
Speaking of Americans, U.S. road cycling calendar came out. And I just posted this up, Chris. You can take a look at some things here. You know, obviously we're missing the Tour of California. Some of these other races, when Mike was in here, he had mentioned, you know, Joe Martin, Redlands, Tour Gila. These are going to be a little bit bigger events. Tour Utah, Colorado Classic, women's only, men only for the Tour Utah. Anything you see in there, you know, some of these other ones may get a little bit higher pop because of.
I don't see, I don't know if this is a apply to be on this schedule type of list, but I notice Cascade's not on here.
Yeah, this was a good point. I think Cascade is still on, though. I was talking to Jason Grafath, and he was telling me that it's set.
Right.
And it's not going to conflict this year with Nevada City.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing that's interesting is that, you know, obviously this isn't the the USA Crit series, but it looks like there's some overlap with like the Boise Twilight Criteriums on this, and it's most likely going to be on the USA Crit calendar. Alabama Cycling Classic usually has a series of crits, so I don't know if there's intentional overlap there or not. It looks like, oh man, that's tough to have Redlands and Gila really 3 days apart.
Right. And there's been issues with that before. I mean, it would be best to have both of those as races that, but I think they're not, which one is first? So Redlands comes up and then Gila after. So, you know, some of the bigger riders are going to make both of those. And I think they really will this year. They kind of do it as a big, big race.
Yeah. It just seems like which one's the bigger race. Okay. Let's as a team target Gila. We'll skip Redlands. And that way some of the competition that does Redlands will be coming into Gila totally wrecked.
Right.
And we've got a better shot at that. So it seems like they're kind of working against each other, really only being 3 days apart. But
right. So when you see this list here, since we don't have the Tour of California, what race do you want to go visit, visit and report on the most? Take a look there. See which race. Maybe Virginia, Arlington.
Supposedly Tulsa Tough is like the event to go to if you want to do a race and a party.
Right.
So. I've heard nothing but good things about Boise on this show in particular.
Right.
It seems like Tour of Utah, they're not doing that obviously as a UCI World Tour event, which is probably smart.
Did it get kicked down?
I don't know if it was a...
I think that's where it's been. It's just, it's been slowly and surely just kind of been milked from the better riders there. You know, a few years ago, it was kind of when Colorado was taking off, too.
Yeah.
It seemed to, you know, you had four or five World Tour Cadells there. I mean, you know, a bunch of different riders.
Right.
That's what Guymon was out there with the Vodders team. You know, Trek, there was a bunch of them. So just not quite the same.
No, it seems like there's the kind of handful of World Tour teams that feel obligated to attend, like Trek or Education First, that have more USA roots.
We had Jumbo out there a few years ago with SEP, and then last year was just Israel Cycling Academy and
Education First.
So, hey, you'd wrote this on this my fence. Why do you want to talk about my fence? We're going to talk about.
It seems like that's a more pertinent off-season activity, and I think we're right in the throes of the off-season. So I think this is when most of us try and catch up on all those activities that we didn't do right. when we had plenty of daylight in the summer. So now we're trying to squeeze it in between rainstorms and what limited daylight we have. So it's it was good to hear that you took on the challenge of fixing your fence and hand sawing a bunch of 2x4s and planks to put it all back together again.
So a fence between the neighbors and our cracked, you know, as wood fences go. And so it had to be fixed because I have some animals.
Right.
And the weather is going to come up and it's just going to be more of a mess.
Especially with the wind.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't have I was looking to get a saw and then you're like, hey, I've got one. And I'm just like, I just need to cut a few things. So I had a handsaw. So we fixed it. It was like an 8-foot section. My dad and I out there put it back together. And, you know, I know everyone's interested, but, you know, these are the kind of things we do. Right. Instead of nailing them, I use wood screws because I was worried that you start to hammer into a crappy fence. It's just the whole thing's going to come down.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to wood screw this back together.
That does the job, right?
I mean, Do you have any projects coming up?
I've got more than I can count at the moment. I've got to do the backsplash in my kitchen. That's on my to-do list. Yeah. I've got some outdoor furniture I need to get taken care of. I've got some indoor furniture I need to take care of. And then some interior construction that I'd like to get done as well. So I've got a pretty lengthy list of things that I need to dive back into. So we just had our kitchen redone, so I've got to tidy that up as well.
Well, you hear the music. That's our things to make you go, which I'm wondering about your whole projects you have in your garage. I know you've got a bunch of tools and so if someone wants to hire Kurt or Chris for all their woodworking needs, I think you're the one to come to.
No, I would start with Kurt. And if you want somebody to like watch, you can hire me. I'll just watch.
He's a warrior.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is. How about, so some things that make you go, do you have anything on the list for that?
Oh,
or do you want me to start off with mine?
You can start off and then maybe I'll piggyback on
okay.
that.
Okay. So I saw, what brought this to my more focus in my mind was when I was talking to Mike Sayers and he was indicating the young youth movement basically in World Tour, how it's kind of just changed and not Valverde is not going to be the older. He's going to maybe be the last old person to win world championships. Well, Contador and his brother, they have a continental team. They raised alarm over young talent poaching, they said, and young riders turning pro too soon. They're worried about the new rules where, and they say the World Tour teams, this is written in Velo News of 19 teams, but I looked that up and that's actually, I think there's 20 spots that you're going to have for the World Tour for 2020, not 19. I could be wrong on what I'm kind of looking up here, but basically they're having more, they're saying that these World Tour teams are now poaching some of the younger riders. They're not ready to go and they're moving up. And then you see the contrary, you've seen what Evenepoel has done. You've seen what Bernal have done. You've seen Pogačar. Now these are maybe exceptions, but some of these guys are coming in and they seem ripped and ready to go right away. So this might be a little self-serving for Contador because they have a continental team that is being poached.
Right.
So they're sending up the flags when it might be just for their own benefit. But I don't know.
How old was he when he jumped into the sport?
How old was Contador?
Yeah, good question. At the World Tour level.
I don't know. He wasn't necessarily that old.
Right.
And I think some of these guys, when you have these amazing riders, it might be the best that they go up there and they get groomed that way. But maybe some of the others aren't ready. But I don't think the others will be poached.
Maybe they are and they're just kind of fallen by the wayside here when they shouldn't have jumped in the ranks that quickly. It was good to see kind of a tangent to that. I'm going to forget his name here.
Enric Mas?
No. He just signed with UAE from Rally.
We just talked about him.
McNulty.
McNulty,
it was good to see him kind of not jump into the World Tour scene as an 18-year-old kid right out of high school and kind of progress into it a little more at a realistic pace.
Right.
So he'll be going to the World Tour stage or World Tour level next year from Rally. So he took a good approach to it.
He did. And, look, with some of that, maybe you can talk about, I think that was on your winners and losers, but kind of just the whole, Israel Cycling Academy and they're just seem to be pumping everything up. We can go into that directly unless you had some
interesting
other topics.
not necessarily an interesting topic, but I did read this morning that Wout Van Aert did win his legal case against his former team and is not having to pay them 1.1 million euro to
Nick Noins.
Yeah. So I think that his former team is going to try and appeal that decision, but gosh, it's just unfortunate that that relationship came to that point with him trying to break away, or I guess he did break away to get into a World Tour team. But I can understand his team feeling a little begrudged at having lost the marketing ability of Wout Van Aert.
Right. So I looked at that as well, and I was looking kind of from a legal perspective to see if there was any grounds to begin with for him breaking his contract, because that's really what it was.
Yeah. Like,
and it was with Rumpart and
Crendon Circus.
Right. And remember also Aqua Blue was all in the mix of trying to.
Yeah.
So they went through. Now, who the contract was with originally? Was it with like you see Vodders? It's actually, I think they signed a contract with Slipstream Sports and they have a sponsor.
Right.
So the sponsor comes in and out. You still got a contract with Vodders that you have to hold to. And maybe that contract has some break in it where, you know, if a sponsor goes out, you then get to be released from your contract. I don't know. So my interest in this was, you know, he broke the contract and then it said in there, oh, Noyens stayed on as manager. Okay, so that to me sounds like more that maybe it wasn't so much with the manager who filed the lawsuit himself and damages, and part of the reason they'll probably have to appeal is because he was then ordered to pay attorney's fees for the Wout Van Aert.
Okay,
so he'll probably appeal just at least for that reason, because they have winner pay loser pays type of situation over there. So
gotcha.
It's kind of their tort reform.
Okay,
but I couldn't really see that, because the reason this was really thrown out was because Noyens had tried to have another manager or team owner person, not owner, someone in there testify, and he was trying to have him lie. So that was one of the reasons the judge is like, you know what, there's just too much crap going on. So I would like to actually see the ruling and kind of see the breakdown of, did he have reason to break the contract the way it was written? Because it's almost like it was thrown out, not on a technicality, but more along the lines of, you know, you've done some bad, shady dealings in here, Noyens yourself, and we're just going to say, too bad.
Yeah.
It's probably good to just get it over with. So.
Interesting. Have you paid any attention to the, I guess we'll call it Ineos for now, the Ineos-Freeman-Sutton legal battle as it pertains to the early testosterone issues and...
Not more than what I've seen on headlines. And I keep bookmarking it in a sense in my mind. Like, yeah, I really want to come back to this.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's kind of progressing that he was lying, that there was a Jiffy bag for someone, but it wasn't. And then I've seen where Ineos is now saying, hey, if there's any wrongdoing, we're pulling out of the sport.
And I think they caveated that with, if there's any wrongdoing after we stepped in, we're coming out. So it sounds like they're willing to accept the fact that there may have been some nefarious activity before they came on as a sponsor, but if there was any after they came on as a sponsor, they're going to bail out. I've done the same. I've meant to read more about it. It just seems like it's a lot of confused back and forth, he said, he said type stuff. It sounds like Freeman's blaming Sutton. Sutton's claiming, no, it's not me. And so it'd be interesting if it finally plays out, if there was just like a good summary of it all to play catch up on.
Yeah, so maybe you'll do that and you'll summarize it for everybody.
Maybe. It sounds like it's still well underway though, so we might be a good ways out.
I'm almost done with Vodder's book, and his I don't know if you knew he wrote a book.
Sure.
Okay. So yes, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And I'm in the section now where Brad Wiggins is being pilfered and taken away and poached, I guess we'd use Contador's words, to Sky, and how that whole system, and he's not got good things to say about Brailsford. And then what's so interesting is, you know, they take all these ex-dopers, and then they suddenly decide later on, oh, we can't, and this kind of ties in here,
yeah.
Oh, we're going to have a clean, and if you've had anything to do with the sport, you know, we're now excommunicating you from there. But yeah, those guys are what kind of helped develop that team.
Right.
And, I don't know. It's a weird situation, but
it definitely seems messy, and looks like there's obviously going to be attempts to try and like cover up as much of it as they can, just to keep their image clean.
Do you remember when Danielson got popped right before the Tour of Utah, and Vodders had said, you know, if any more positives, we're shutting down the team completely.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't.
Right.
And And his point, and I actually liked what he said about that at the time, was he's like, look, that was my intent. I wanted to just be done with it. But he's like, the reality is if I do that, I'm just putting a bunch of people out of work.
Right.
What does that do?
Yeah.
And I agree. You know, the best thing is to get rid of Danielson and try to make a, but you know, these writers, maybe they need to be threatened too with, cause you're, when someone like, you know, we saw this Sophie girl, she's positive. I mean, that puts a bad stain on the whole team. And now everyone else that's writing for that team is under suspicion.
Right. Definitely. And especially if her B sample comes back positive, anybody on that team that has any negative tests would be like, oh.
What was the Conti team a few years ago? They had a ton of them. And I think they came back, or did they fold this last year? I'm trying to remember which. It was mom was in my.
I forget. Yeah.
She was chopping bananas on with her meds or something.
Right. It fell out of her sleeve into my pasta. I don't know.
Crazy stuff. Anything else with your winners or losers? You want to talk about your Israel?
Yeah. No, it's good to see that. So Israel Cycling Academy, from what I understand, they bought Katusha's World Tour license. Right. They've also done a good job of really building up their team with a lot of high-level talent. So I think they picked up, like, Dan Martin. They picked up Niels Paulet yesterday. It sounds like Travis McCabe is going there or is assumed to be going there.
I heard the confirmation. You know, Mike was in here. He's like, oh, I got you know, some rumors. He's going to some big place. That's great. Yeah. And then the news reports all the next day were, yeah, reported to be going.
Right, and I haven't heard anything more about that. But it seems like they wouldn't drop that without a lot of concrete information. But who knows? But it's just good to see that team was able to kind of build off of Katusha's missteps and actually kind of get a real team instead of having like, okay, well, we need 19 World Tour teams and these guys got the money. We'll give them the license and they're going to throw a crappy team out there. But it's good to see that they've actually built a solid team that will contend, whether it's for bigger stage races or just one day classics. They've got kind of a good, well-rounded squad.
Yeah. So. They seem to be kind of just adding and adding some other teams. Dimension Data, they have a new kit.
I saw that. It's really terrible.
It's blue.
Yeah, which is fine.
It's more but movie star-like.
What's their new team name? I forget.
Good point. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like NTD or something.
Right. I saw that Steve Cummings retires.
Yes.
Seems like there was someone else that retired as well. There's probably a bunch of them, but he was like the big one that kind of came out. So.
Right. And he was on Dimension Data.
Yeah.
Are they keeping Cavendish?
No, so Cavendish went to Bahrain.
That's right, yeah. Okay. And I feel like there was a reason behind that. Wasn't there a trainer or something on the team that liked him?
Shane Sutton?
That might be it.
It's one of those guys that had been with Sky, Ineos, who had moved over there. I want to say it was him. And then McLaren, he had kind of had a relationship with him.
McLaren, so. That's what I was thinking of, because he was with them in his Specialized days when they developed that Vanjero bike.
So that'll be interesting. And also McLaren going there, you know, they're all aero.
Right.
You'd think that'd be perfect for Rohan Dennis.
Who's he riding for?
I think he's riding for himself.
Yeah.
He's doing the Stettina thing with time trials.
I heard a lot of same thing, kind of like think about like the McCabe thing where there was an article that came out that said, hey, link to Team X. There were a lot of those articles 2 months ago about Dennis, and then it just kind of faded away. And I don't know if it's a combination of, who cares if he wins a time trial, versus how much are we going to have to pay him? How much of a headache is this guy going to be? And does he really bring anything to our team for those costs? And it sounds like he may have kind of priced himself out of a contract. I mean, not too many teams have spots left, and not too many teams have big spending budgets left that could take him on.
Trying to remember who it was on Twitter came after a bunch of journalists and some other people defending Rohan Dennis, because there was an article written. I want to say it was Gregor Braun. Maybe he writes some freelance stuff sometimes with Velo News, and he had written and said, "Oh, you know, I couldn't get commentary from Rohan." I'd reached out to him, and then had some speculation about him, you know, kind of being a tough guy to deal with. And I'm trying to remember who it was. It seems like it was American or like a Yanni Brockovich, someone who had raced with him.
Was it Rohan Dennis?
It might have been him as someone. No, it was a legit, you know, another person. I'm trying to remember who it was. Okay. So maybe someone could comment on
Twitter. Oh, I think I heard. Nathan Haas?
No? Doesn't ring a bell, okay. But it could be. Anyway, really defending Rohan and saying, basically calling out the media for being such like crappy reporting. And I was like, yeah, true.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. So we don't know where he's going.
No. He seems like, again, if you're a team that is in need of some kind of big name, it seems like maybe you run the risk of taking him on. I mean, he's right. Going to do well in time trials, obviously. He'll right. do okay in 7-day stage races.
So when Mike was in here and I said this to him, I go, so isn't it, I mean, if you're looking to sign, wouldn't you be upset when you see how much he destroyed everyone in world championships?
Right.
Knowing that, you know, that couldn't have been the difference in the bike, a minute and a half or whatever you put on someone.
You hope not.
And you're like, isn't that a little upsetting thinking, oh, he could have won the stage of the tour.
Right.
I mean, you literally walked away from a stage win. That's probably how good he was riding at the time.
Right, totally.
Why wouldn't that be upsetting? And I mean, to Mike, you know, he's like, well, my talent, yes, it would be upsetting. But I'm like, managers, anybody to sign, you're like, do you take that risk? And that's really sucks that he decided as an adult to do that.
Right, yeah.
So back, before we finish up here, do you know any, let's talk about transfer market on the local Northern California scene.
Okay.
Do you know of any big riot changes? Have you heard anything?
Heard a lot of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before you get to the big one that you broke this morning to me, start with some other ones that you may have heard about. Or
Some other ones. Okay.
If you don't know, I could go to a Folsom Bike.
There. Is this where I announce I'm leaving the team?
This is where I announce where you're leaving the team.
Okay.
I don't know if you know yet.
I didn't get that email.
Yeah. Are you the president still? No, you're not.
I'm not. That's. Okay. I think that's why I got ousted.
Yeah.
I think on the most local of local levels, I know Folsom Bike is rebuilding their team and looking to kind of grow their master's side. I believe they're 35 plus, 45 plus. So I know they've picked up a bunch of new folks there. I think Sierra Nevada also on a very local level is looking to kind of replenish their 35, 45 plus. Racer. So I think that'll be helpful to kind of increase the distribution of riders across teams and in those masters races. So it'll be good to see. And then I think on a more not it's local, but it's kind of more NorCal overall. I saw that Mike Spikes announced Jeff Linders joining their team.
Wow.
So that'll be a good add for them. And they're already obviously a stacked powerhouse team. So add in another versatile sprinter into the mix and I mean, you've got him and you've got Matt Chat.
Well, did they release their roster? Is Chat still staying with them?
I assume so. I haven't heard otherwise, but.
Well, so that's the question.
Yeah.
Maybe one got ousted for the other. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, that'll obviously help their team out.
Okay. So you haven't heard. How about Mark Pro or any of those others?
I haven't heard anything on that front. I assume they're going to stay around as a team.
They didn't really do much local quiet. Racing, though, this last year.
No, I think they focused on that.
Stillman, I guess, showed up a bunch.
He did. He did really well in the early season, just crushed everybody. But I think they are going to do the USA Crits again because they were one of those, they call them varsity or D1 teams or whatever the heck the classification was. So I think they're going to try for that again.
So it'll be interesting to see. I just saw, I think it was Justin Thompson did well at Iron Horse.
But that was back in May.
That was back why did I just see that come up?
Because it just got posted on Facebook for some reason. Okay. It was like, hey, local guide is good 7 months ago.
Oh, okay. Well, I should have. And I was thinking also, I was like, yeah, that's right. I was like, that couldn't have just happened.
Right. Because I remember reading and it's like, I feel like I've read this story before. And you scroll up in the date, it's like, oh.
So, well, great. Congrats to Justin Thompson. Sorry. So it'll be interesting to see what Tarun has going. Maybe they're bringing a VC, vegan cyclist over now.
Is he a Cat 1? I know there's cutoffs.
You know what? I want to get to the bottom of that because when I talked to Linder, he did not defend the Cat 1 only moniker on the team. There are some Cat 2s on that team.
No, I don't think on the elite team.
Oh, maybe that's
because I know they have a breakdown. They've got like their elite team, which were the guys that raced in pink, and then there's the Tarun.
No, squad. There were some of those. I think, and I could be wrong.
No,
but I
think Tarun still has a pretty solid team, and they've got. Bobby Tara, they've got Matt Michael, they've got Chris Evans, they've got a couple other guys. They've got Zach Gottsman. He's a really good sprinter too. Yeah. So I mean, they've got a good team.
Did you hear if they picked anybody up new this year?
Tarun? Yeah. I haven't heard, okay. No.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see about that. Any last closing winners, losers? Anything else you want to talk about from the world of cycling?
From the world of cycling? I'm sure I've got
Have you looked plenty. At the NorCal calendar that's come out?
I have. That might be like a longer topic in and of itself because there's like a lot of races have come, a lot of races have gone. It looks like somebody has bought kind of the promotional rights that
Sky Express.
Yeah, that Red Kite used to do. So a lot of those Livermore crits will be back on. And that Sky Express name looks like it's attached to a couple races in Chico. So not the Chico stage race, but the Pasquinta Hills road race and the downtown criterium. So I don't know if those are going to be on as just kind of like a weekend in and of itself or what, but it looks like there's some interesting dynamics with, you know, everybody said, oh, if we kill off Red Kite, race numbers will magically reappear. And they didn't. Now that this Sky Express is coming back in, maybe that'll kind of help recede some of the interested racers that want to take on something closer to home. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, we have a great amount of events to do in this area. I mean, we're not lacking, even though, you know, we may lose a bunch of races. Still a lot of them out there on the calendar. I'd be interested to see what's coming back. Hey, look, go do some races. Go do the River Ride World Championships.
You don't even need a license to do that.
You don't need a license to do that one. Yeah. You can just show up and, you know, but be careful out there. Be dangerous.
Yeah, that's
not just in the riding, you might get picked on.
There's that. There's a lot of new housing development going on along the route, so that could change the dynamic.
That's a tough part for cycling. You know, you're out in the rural area and country, and next thing you know, it's not so much anymore. Right. So it takes a little bit of a beating.
Who's your loser?
Well, the girl that tested positive.
Okay.
I don't know that I have any other myself. I mean, I've got to get my acting gear. Got to get back to...
You're busy building fences.
I'm building fences. I'm working. I'm doing the show. It's, you know, Look, I'll just say this and then we can head out of here. But take a listen to the last podcast I had with Dr. Jason Braley. I know you haven't yet as a fan of the show. It was one of my most favorite, and then don't take away from anybody else, but I had a great time with that interview, and I thought there was a bunch of great information out there for anybody cycling, and you know, health-wise and just what you have. But check out the show for that episode. I was pretty proud of it.
I will definitely consider it.
All right. One last thing I would give, since the weather's going to turn bad, I have a tip for bad weather riding. And this has been one that's great. Now, it's maybe difficult in the day and age of digital, but if you get a newspaper, you should be getting some newspaper. You go out and you ride, your shoes are wet, stuff your shoes with newspapers after you're done and let them sit there. They will, I don't know what happens. Well, I know what happens. The water gets absorbed in the paper.
There you go.
And it's one of the best techniques. It keeps your shoes in that form. And it works. It's one of the best things that I've had for if you're going to ride the next day and you want your shoes to be dried out.
I'll add an element to that. Take the insoles out, too.
Well, yeah, that's a good one. Right. Yeah. So take the insoles out, stuff it with newspaper, and your shoes are good to go. Any other winter riding tricks and tips?
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it. I agree. All right. So this has been episode 152 of the Between Two Wheels podcast. I appreciate Chris once again coming in. Check us out on YouTube.
Happy Facebook. To be here.
Yes. Thank you for coming.
See you.